Yeah, I do.
What I is do. It?
I'm a three. Dance? No, oh. I'm a three, a 3-2.
Okay.
Right, Jeff, I think that's right.
Two and three.
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so a y'all three, are
two.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I struggled believing that the accuracy of it until I read.
Emork and Kron's. Did you read that one?
No, it was like a workbook, so Enneagram three workbook.
Okay.
Tyler Zock.
Maybe my wife bought it for me, and I went through the whole thing, and I was like, "Dang it, this thing is wildly accurate."
Punishingly accurate.
Yeah, it was all about like your deep desire to photobomb Jesus.
That may be the best way to put it.
Photobomb Jesus. That's so funny.
It's like you have Jesus. He's definitely in the picture.
Yeah.
But so are you.
Yeah.
And I had just had this existential moment in Japan on a trip. We went to the suicide forest. We were coming out. The clouds parted. And there's Mount Fuji. And I'm standing off looking at it. And I'm seeing, I don't know, a couple dozen of people from our group that are all taking pictures at the base of Mount Fuji.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like taking turns because they all want to be in the picture. And I have this moment like where I'm thinking in my head, what on earth makes me look at Mount Fuji and says, you know what would make this better? If I was in the bottom of the picture. This is a beautiful view.
Yeah.
What made me think, what's missing is, because my grandfather traveled the world, like he was all over, and you can go look at his old picture books, and they're just pictures of the places. He's not in any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's not in any picture. Through the whole album, he's in nothing. And you like realize it's because he's taking the picture.
Yeah.
Like they were filmed, like he couldn't be in them.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I read that book, and I was like, oh, I'm the idiot who's in the bottom of the picture. Living out like my whole life like that. So yeah, that's me.
That's
three.
So funny.
I guess is that accurate for three? Like you're kind of an expert. Is that threes have that issue or have to walk that path?
Yeah, that they want to be elevated. They want to be seen. They want to be important, significant. All of those things. Yeah, and there is this thing with identity in threes that they really struggle with because they're called chameleons. So whoever they're in front of, they can become. And so they're left with this thought of, okay, well, who am I really? If maybe they like me, but I just showed them like their personality. So do they even really like me? And so it's this need to be something. I want to be Mount Fuji, Fiji to the people. I want to be that. I want to inspire awe to others, which is not a bad thing. You just have to be aware of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are what?
I'm a two wing three.
Two wing three.
We twins on that.
Both of you are two wing three. So explain that to me. What's your problem?
What's your problem?
Pride.
No, I'm a pride. Okay.
So, no, like pride, and I would say shame. Yeah. Shame shows up big time.
Shame is also
why?
Three. Shame is
why?
Also for three. Why pride?
Yeah.
Because we will do anything for anyone, but not without expectations or without resentment if we don't feel like it's reciprocated. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a perfect example.
Okay.
I just gave so knowing I'm a two, I'm knowing my motivations and I have to make sure that I do not do things out of those motivations. So I threw my mom a surprise birthday party. My two-ness was so happy to do it. I loved it. It was wonderful. I love my mom so much. And then I thought, I wish someone would do this for me.
That's true right there.
That's the two. The wing three, my wing three also said, and I need to make sure she knows that I did this and my sisters don't get credit for it too. So it's like that is the perfect combo. That is the narrative.
My world is like, I can't hear somebody doing something and not go help. Like, so if my wife Rachel's doing dishes and I'm on the couch, like, I hear dishes, I go, mm-hmm. I clearly got to, like, I have to get up and go help.
It's almost like you hear her say, hey, why are you not helping me with the dishes?
But she would never say that.
But she never
says
that.
She wouldn't.
That. But that's what we hear.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's okay. Like, it's almost like we hear this ask that isn't there.
Yeah.
Because we,
so
because
guilt. There's a lot of guilt then with that for you guys.
No? Yes, but I would think it's pride. I think it's pride. Yeah. Like, we.
Okay.
Because you want to be seen doing it.
Yeah, like, how could they do this without me? Or, I don't know. It's very, it's like.
Do you see me doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you see me doing it, you should reciprocate with some sort of affection, love, or like, hey, I see you. Mm-hmm.
So you feel the need to get up and do the dishes because it's an opportunity to be seen doing it.
Sure.
Not out of the guilt of, oh, she's mad because I'm not doing it.
Yeah, more out of the, I hope this elicits an action on her end.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's the reciprocal on it.
Like, I do all this stuff around the house or whatever, and I have, like, a written to-do list, like, visibly, and I have, like, my to-do list, and then I have my husband's that I'm like, please, if you can please do these things. And if he doesn't do his in the urgency, I'm like, I feel totally resentful. Because I'm like, I am doing all of these things. And he's like, I literally didn't ask you to do a single one of those. You know, like, he's like, I didn't. You're overwhelmed.
And that's why you're not rewarded, like, for them, because he didn't ask you to do them.
Mm-hmm.
But you still want a reward.
From his perspective.
Am I hearing that right?
And he's like, hello, I'm over here making money. What do you mean? You need me to move a mattress? You know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll move a mattress at some point, but right now I need to make sure we can afford this house.
Yeah. Okay. And
so it's like if that paints
so
a picture.
So
how
do the Enneagrams link up to, like, other things like the five love languages?
They don't.
They don't at all.
Mm-mm.
There's no correlation between twos are predominantly more whatever.
No. There's no, like, science behind that. So, like, I can have a theory. Do y'all hear my dryer?
Yeah, it's great.
I'm sorry.
Well done, Ansley. Good job, girl. Look at her. Multitask. I want to give you your flowers right now in front of everyone. Yeah, and I hope that somebody does laundry for her one day.
Killing it as a mom.
Yes. A retweet. Okay, sorry. I was, like, stopping my sentence because I figured I'd have to repeat it.
No, but anybody listening just went and checked their laundry.
Yeah, there you go. Your clothes are dry. Okay, what was I saying?
The love languages. The theory on the love language connection.
Oh,
to
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah. So there's, I'm sure people have theories. I could guess that acts of service could be important to a certain type, or quality time could be important to another type. But there's no, like, actual science or research behind it.
What about, like, Myers-Briggs or Working Genius? Is there links? I mean, because I think personality types are personality types. Like, so when I, like, take those, they all kind of speak to one another in some way. Like, a lot of them are like, hey, strengths, you're a great communicator, and whatever, your ideation and wonder and you know, like, Working Genius, mm-hmm. they're all feels to be like a similar thread, but I don't know mm-hmm. that the Enneagram pulls that thread or even links it.
So the Enneagram is deeper than those, right? So, like, those just tell me what I'm good at and what I'm bad at.
Yeah.
And I really usually already know those things. But the Enneagram talks about the why behind the action. So, yes, I'm a good communicator, but why? And why are you motivated to be a good communicator? Mm-hmm. Is it because you want to perform? Is it because you want to feel wanted? Is it because you want to keep the peace and that's how you do it? You know, like, so it's kind of, I always say, like, it's as if you and I showed up to a birthday party with the same gift. The Myers-Briggs would be like, you two have the same gift. And the Enneagram would be like, but why do you have the same gift? Mm. And why? What does it mean to each of you? And yeah. That's probably different. You probably have a different motivation for bringing the gift. So it just goes a little bit deeper.
Yeah. And what the response to the gift will mean to each of you differently.
Yeah.
Like if they exactly. go, oh my gosh, thank you so much. You brought this gift. Oh my gosh. And other people maybe don't want to be seen and that bothers them. Well, if it doesn't happen, it bothers other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. Yeah. I was real late on the adoption of anything Enneagram. I was like, this is witchcraft. Not really. I just liked
common thought.
Yeah, I was just like, okay. So you're saying it's just like the other one I took on Facebook. I'm a lion bear.
Yeah.
Nah, of course it is. Of course I am.
Bear.
Right. You know? Right.
And then it's like it kept getting closer and closer into mm-hmm. my circle. Like mm-hmm. it was ancillary. And there's these people here. And somebody was talking about the Enneagram. At first I thought it was a diet. You know, like gluten-free. I'm Enneagram 3. And I was like, I'm sure you are. I'm eating Skittles, buddy. So calm down, Mr. Gluten-free. And then I was like, okay, it's like this or these other ones.
Yeah.
And then when Ashley, where she works, they do it. And she's like, you're taking this.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, she is.
Is she a one?
What's the one that's, yeah, let's see. She is order and like I think she's a one.
Yeah, because her and Rachel are the same. They're both ones.
Yeah,
both of our wives are ones.
She's a one. I think one would it be a one wing nine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
a nine or a two.
I think she's a one wing
or both.
Nine.
Yeah,
you can use both because
we
your
didn't
wings.
Share anything.
Yeah, so Rachel's a one wing two.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
She likes to get stuff done. She loves to get stuff done. She's efficient and effective, and like we're doing it.
Yeah, I love that.
So,
and Ashley's that way too.
Yeah, that's why they're friends.
Yeah, that's why they like each other. They're friends because we're friends.
Yeah,
but I have a lot of other friends, and she's not friends with their wives. I have other friends that she's like, nah, I'm good.
Nah,
the reason they're
out.
Friends though is because the oneness tells them they have to be.
Yeah.
Like we see this amazing quality in the other one.
Yeah. I mean, so let's go back to the witchcraft statement because there
Well, hold on a second.
Okay, go finish that. Then we
everybody listening, this is Ainsley.
Yeah.
Ainsley.
Ainsley B.
Ainsley.
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 Like the difference of pan and pain. Ain.
Okay. Ainsley.
There's an
Everybody listening, this is Ainsley. And we're in it. And we're going to keep getting in.
Here's what we need to do. Make sure we ask this question, okay?
Okay.
Because we had Kylie Small on a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Who is from Louisiana. She's from northern Louisiana. And you remember what she calls her grandparents? Louisiana. She called her grandparents Honey and was it Big?
Big Pop.
Big Pop. Mm-hmm. What do you call your grandparents, Ainsley? And if it's a Louisiana thing?
No. I get. Okay. Okay. I have.
Is she making it up? Is this not honest? Because I feel like you know pretty quickly.
I know. I'm thinking about
what do you
kid.
Call your grandparents? I don't know if I can say it out loud.
I'm
How bad
of
is
my
it?
My kids. Like, I'm so used to calling my parents their grandparent name. So I'm like, no, those, I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, no, those aren't my grandparents. Those are my kids' grandparents. Those are my parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Aren't valid.
I have a grandmother and a papa and a Glennie and Papa Frank. And then my kids, but my kids call my parents. You know, whenever they say things wrong and then it sticks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have that across the board. So Emmy and what was supposed to be Popsy became Pocky. So Emmy and Pocky and then Rara and Koki, but he was supposed to be Coley.
Is your husband like Taiwanese or something?
No,
that sounds very crazy. Asian. Pocky. Riri.
Okay,
or something.
We're Cajun. What was it? We're Cajun. So,
even your husband.
No, he's not. He's not. No, but my family is.
You're
However,
Cajun. Okay.
North Louisiana, like Kylie, is a different world than South Louisiana. North Louisiana is way more country, way more like this.
Yes,
and
she was.
More Arkansas. South Louisiana is more like slow. They talk like that. It's very French influenced. So it's a totally different culture. Totally different culture.
And you have a woman in your family. You call her grandmother?
Grandmother. Mm-hmm. She. Mm-hmm.
Grandmother. Yes. I feel like that's a woman who whipped me with spoons.
Yes.
Like, grandmother, if you demand to be called grandmother, that's another level. Sorry, grandmother. I'm sure I deserved it.
It is. Yeah, she's proper. She is a grandmother. Grandmother.
Grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but the Louisiana thing. Oh, go ahead.
No, finish Louisiana.
Louisiana thing.
Yeah.
The Louisiana thing is similar to what you were saying with your daughter niece. Like, we have so much of that. I have aunts mm-hmm. and cousins that I'm like, they are not my blood relatives, but they are closer to me than my blood relatives. And that was like at my mom's surprise birthday party. They were all my aunts and uncles and cousins, and not one of them I was related to. So whenever you said that, I was like, yeah, that tracks. Totally get it.
Yeah.
Not weird to me.
So Rachel and I are shooting for Pops and Gigi, but Callan is just going to be one in July this year. So we're real early on it. I'm afraid it's going to come out poops and it's all going to go bad, but
we're going for
Pops. We're going for Pops. We'll see if it works out.
I think it will.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to do Grandfather.
Yeah.
Grandfather.
Yeah,
in honor of Ainsley.
You need a pocket watch and a pipe for that. Yeah.
Grandfather.
So let's go back to Enneagram, because there has been recirculated conversation about it that it was huge 6 years ago. Like, it was exploding 6 years ago. The church adopted it, didn't know what to do with it. But it's kind of come back with some very prominent voices saying that maybe the roots of it are occultish and we should dismiss it. What's your response to that thought?
That's silly. Okay, it's not entirely silly. I will tell you this. If you want a well-researched and well-articulated deep dive into that question, Pastor Tyler Zock has a course on it. He has a free download on it. His website is gospelforenneagram.com. He has a free download that is Should Christians Use the Enneagram? That gives you a brief history, it helps you answer that question. I point every single person to this downloadable, to this course. It is incredible. He explains things so well. He goes into the depths of it. And so I have his download pulled up because that is what I pull from, you know, whenever I am answering this question. And essentially, the Enneagram is not... Okay, wait. This is my own separate thought, and then I'll get into his download.
Okay.
The Enneagram does not have anyone that owns it, right? It's not like Myers-Briggs that has a research and development organization. The Enneagram is a bunch of different people who put their thoughts on it, and thus it became. So anytime you have an Enneagram coach, we're all teaching from our worldviews, which is why I think Christians should use discernment, whether or not you want to apply it or not, use it or not. Don't use it in place of Holy Spirit discernment and wisdom and all of those. Of course not. Use it as just a simple tool that it is. That said, there are some of the historical figures or influences that have misspoken about where they received the information from the Enneagram, and they have refuted that and said, no, that's not actually what happened. So there is this element of human error that we do have to take into consideration. And that's what's hard about it, right? That's what's hard about how it is so accurate, and yet we have to accept the human error side of it. Mm-hmm. And some of the thought leaders misspeaking. So whenever we go into Tyler Zock's information, he talks about how somebody said they got some of the information from automatic writing. And he was like, I didn't know what that was. And it's basically like the New Age equivalent of the Christian version of prayer and meditation. So relaxing your mind, allowing messages to like come to you and flow through you, whatever. But he did not, Naranjo is his name. He did not explicitly say that he received the Enya types from spirits. And that's what everyone thinks. Everyone thinks that, oh, he got it from demonic spirits. Not accurate. He did not say that. He could have meant just meditative writing, but his previous comment about it and just the fuzziness of it was problematic. Like, he for sure misspoke. And so we do have to take that into consideration. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that he did not receive a lot of other information from previous teachers, and that is where we get most of our information from. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, we were there's talking, and Jeff, you made the statement about all truth being God's truth.
Right. Dr. Lisa Long taught me that.
Okay, so how would that play into some of these conversations in your mind?
So I think I have to, again, use discernment, as Ainsley said. Let Holy Spirit discern some things in me. Like, and you talked about when you read the Enneagram stuff, and I read the Enneagram stuff. Like, it just felt so true that it was hard for me to go like, okay, the source of this is probably evil if it seems to be in the design of how God built me. Like, so before I knew the Enneagram, which was what was great about the Enneagram is it gave me a lot of language. Because like before I knew the Enneagram, I'd recognize the pride issue. I would preach and it would be great and I wanted to celebrate it and be good and be like, look at me. And so I came up with this expression. No lie. This is the expression I use to this day after somebody says good sermon. I'll look at them and go, well, I hope it helped. I've been saying that for 20 years before I knew about the Enneagram. And then the Enneagram is like, guess what? You're a helper. And I was like, that's stupid. Like that's because in my heart of hearts, at the truest point of me, I want to help people when I communicate, when I teach, when I preach, whatever. So it just became this like revelation of like, yeah, I was like looking in a mirror. So this all truth is God's truth. I had to go like, okay, so I don't know the exact source of the Enneagram. But what I know is it looked like a mirror to me and it looked right back at my soul of the design of God in me.
When I discovered the Enneagram, it was the first time I felt like I could take a breath and say, oh, God, that's what you meant to do when you made me. Like, you made me this way for this purpose, for this way to be and exist. And wow, like I actually for the first time feel fearfully and wonderfully made. Because prior to learning about the Enneagram, I was like, who am I? Is this good? Is this bad? Like, I hate these things about myself. Do they serve any purpose? How do I get them out of me? Just like this desire to be wanted. Like, so I was dated a guy who heavily influenced some of my work. And I remember sitting in a car before we were dating. We were just friends. And I remember saying, I just want to be wanted in a relationship. Like, that's what I want in a relationship, is to be wanted. And then he ended up making millions of dollars off of just that phrase. But that being said, that is the root of the Enneagram, of my Enneagram, is to be wanted. So whenever I said that out loud and then learned about the Enneagram a year later, I was like, oh my gosh, Lord, that's nuts. So it's just interesting how.
So, So now you've shifted seasons a little bit. We've talked a couple times over the years and you've become a mom, whatever. And you've moved into a different ministry season. You've quit doing the Wild Confidence podcast. And in this helper in you, how have you found space and place for that as all these other things have shifted and changed?
Ugh. I have certainly struggled with that. I do feel like a lot of my efforts right now are being focused on the nonprofit that has helped our family whenever my son had his open heart surgery and got his heart, congenital heart defect diagnosis. So I do feel like that is where my focus is right now. And I never, ever wanted to be a stay-at-home wife or mom. I always wanted to work. I didn't even know if I ever wanted to have kids at one point. So now that I'm in the position that I'm in, which is essentially like my husband needs us to let him focus on his role right now, because he just made this huge promotion. Like, he has made it, quote unquote, in his career. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like his season and I'm in the supportive role. So my spotlight is not as shiny as it used to be. And so I'm trying to every day think, this is my season of ministry and I'm learning a lot in it. I'm learning a lot in praying over folded clothes and attempting to make meals with balanced, you know, nutrition and like fueling our bodies well, which may not sound as heavy. It may sound like I'm making it heavier than it needs to be, but I do think that with the intention that I'm having, it is serving my family and my heart to be like, no, this little stuff really does matter. And being a stay-at-home mom and wife is actually way harder than when I worked in ministry. So that's crazy. And that has taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Is there like a Mary Martha dichotomy there? Like, there was this very Martha killing it, shining spotlight, and now there's this this invitation towards Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel it?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I went from stages to being alone in the house most of the day. And one of the things that I realized is that, and one of my focuses now is to put as little on the calendar as humanly possible, which is funny, but it's an attempt to be interruptible. And what I have found is that from my focus to what am I going to say on stage? What am I going to say on Wild Confidence that's going to speak to thousands of people and really land? I have shifted that to I'm clearing my schedule as much as I can so that when a friend says, hey, can you come over? Or, hey, do you want to go to lunch? I can say yes and show up for them immediately. And that has been amazing. I have seen so much fruit from that. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost every week, someone has been like, hey, this is last minute. Can you do this? Can you come with me to this? Almost every week. I'm like, yeah. Yes, I can. And so I've become a friend that shows up. And what I've learned in those things, in the depth and the richness, makes me never care to return to a stage. I genuinely don't care if I'm ever on a stage again, if the people around me think of me and say, she shows up.
Yeah.
And she shows us the Lord.
What's interesting with the Mary Martha thing you bring up, Brian, I think as we circle back to maybe the Enneagram, I feel this is a two, maybe Ainsley, I think you may as well. I feel built to be a Martha. Mm-hmm. Like, the helperness, like, when I read that the first time, the Mary Martha thing, and I'm like, why is Jesus mad at her? Like, what's he upset about? Like, I feel like that's what I'd have been doing. I've been like, hey, we got to get the food ready. I'm going to help. I'm going to clear. Like, but I think, yeah. So there's this, like, in the building of who we are, but I think the story is Jesus pointing out there's seasons for that.
Yeah.
And so maybe, Ainsley, I think, is the Lord is just going, hey, maybe you're in a different season, a Mary season, where you need the space and the time to sit at the feet so you can sit with somebody else.
Absolutely.
And
I think that's like so true.
There, a lot of times, if we are in that season of this Mary at his feet, even then we have a tendency of of kind of casting it to the side based on the idea that I have to do this so that my next Martha moment will be even better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you have to be in this, and this was the season. And if you don't do it, then when you go back to Martha in when your kids turn 12 and 13 and this, and the stages are even bigger, you had to have this as opposed to this being just beautiful in itself. Yeah. Without it being this unbelievably like important stepping stone, it in itself holds something that you can only have with Jesus in its place.
I think for me, the danger is that the Mary season becomes something that I promote in my Martha moments. I reflect back and go, I want to tell you about how good of a Mary I was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, look, I want to tell you about the 6 months I spent as a Mary, God gave me this book, or whatever it was. When I was a Mary, the Lord revealed this to me so I can reveal it to you. So that's where I think, for me, the pride issue shows up, because I will take a Mary moment and Martha the fire out of it. Look at me. I was a great Mary.
That is so funny, because I do feel like that is sort of what's happening. When Truett got his diagnosis, the things that I'm learning about the Lord, I'm like, I have to put this in a book. If not for the masses, for my kids, I do think my attitude has changed from I have to get this to the masses to I really just want this down on paper for my legacy in my home. Like, I want my kids to know these miracles that we have seen. So I am actively struggling with being still at the feet of Jesus and like, okay, I'm going to sit and I'm going to listen and I'm going to steward these little tiny brains as much as I can, because that is so much harder to me than women's conferences. I mean, frontal lobes fully developed, let me add them, okay? These little forming minds, I'm like, this is so hard. It's so hard for me to explain the Trinity to a, you know, I can't use the ice cube demonstration where it's like water and vapor and ice to a 1.5-year-old or a 2-year-old. You know, it's so funny the challenges that have presented themselves. But I do want to chronicle the miracles. Yeah, so I'm kind of in that space of like trying to be in between the two, because it still is a Martha thing to have to do the laundry, do the dishes, do all this stuff.
Of course.
I am still doing and going and moving. But the heart disposition and the quote unquote spotlight, like I talked about, which I ain't afraid of, is just totally different. And my heart is totally different from before having Truett, even.
Yeah.
A lot has changed.
I think I try to make sense of the moments I'm living in as if I can explain them developmentally. Okay, so this is why I'm in this place of invisibility where the world has no clue who I am. Mm-hmm. And everything I say is only important when someone else repeats it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And someone else runs with something that I said, and then I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to make sense of it developmentally. This is what God's trying to develop me with, as opposed to just the idea that my season with him right now is for his joy, not to develop me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he likes me. There is a joy that he has in me and him, and it has nothing to do with my development.
Yeah.
It's just for his joy.
Yeah. That's and crazy.
I'm wrestling with that, not running to what this is developing in me and why he's doing this, because I do so many things with my kid and his development has nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to take him on the greenway and go fishing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not there to develop him. And maybe it does have a developmental thing to spend time with your father and this and this and this. But if he were to get in the truck and say, Dad, developmentally, what is the purpose? I would be like, ah, man, you're missing it, bud.
Yeah.
This is for my joy, because you'll never be 14 again.
Yeah, we had Father's Day last Sunday, and our kids are now, my stepson is dating Brian's daughter, niece, is 18. He's going to college in the fall.
Very far away.
The next, thank God.
And I'm very supportive.
The next one up is 19. We have a 22-year-old and a 22-year-old at Belmont. And then my oldest lives in Illinois. And we were talking about like Father's Day. And Rachel was like, what would you want for Father's Day? I was like, I don't want anything, right? I don't need anything. I got enough shoes. I got too many clothes. I got more books than I'll ever read. I go, but there's not many more Sundays where we all sit at the table, or even most of us sit at the table. And so to me, that was the joy and the reward. There was no premonition of I'm going to give some big eloquent speech about being a follower of Jesus. It was just like, hey, we're at the table eating grilled chicken and corn on the cob on a Sunday, and there aren't many of these left. Yeah. So I'm gonna sit in the moment.
Yeah. That's actually it's a perfect way to one of the things that I have been focusing on and learning in the next book that I'm hoping to write is all about us being God's borrowed breath, and how like that's all we are, is he breathed life into us and we're just borrowing his breath. So how are we going to use it?
Yeah.
How are we speaking to the people around us? How are we just the act of breath, right? Like in existing and the inhale and the exhale of it all. And whenever my daughter was 48 hours from death because she had pneumonia, and we just took her into the hospital and they were like, she needs oxygen immediately, you know, all this stuff. And then a year later, Truett was on a ventilator for open heart surgery. Like someone else's lungs, this machine was breathing for him. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of thought, and I've lost 10 people in the last 10 years that I've loved or cherished. And the entire idea of intentionality with the people around us and how we can be God's borrowed breath with our teeny tiny amount of time here is what I'm thinking of. And I'm thinking of, how am I using my breath to speak to my children? How am I using my breath to influence anything for anybody? Like all of those things matter now to me, when before I was just going too fast to stop and think about the fragility of it all and the fragility of us, of me.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I watched a respiratory therapist thing that I think my mother-in-law sent me. But it was this respiratory therapist talking about we're addicted to breathing.
Interesting.
And yeah, it was like about we're addicted to breathing, but not in a healthy way, because like the healthier a person is, their respiratory rate changes. And a lot of times that we're addicted to breathing, and because we love it so much, we shallow breathe because we want to hurry and get the next breath. But that like really healthy people are not breathing so shallow. They like
breathing deeper and slower.
They breathe deeper, which require, you actually don't need as many breaths per minute as you think you do, but you're just so addicted to like shallow breathing.
Interesting. Right?
You hurry and want the next breath, and that we are prone to addiction to what feels good and feels quick, and we can do this. And then I think she sent it to me, and I spent the rest of the day trying to breathe deep, right? And how conscious you have to be. And from even like when you go to a therapist, when you go, if you're in the middle of a panic attack, one of the things, the first thing they say is take a really deep breath.
Slow down, right? And breathe.
When the doctor's trying to listen to your lungs, then they put the cold thing on your back and they're like, take two deep breaths, because mm-hmm. there was something they couldn't hear in you when you were breathing shallow.
Yeah.
And as you talk about like the borrowed breath of the Lord, and like if I'm only breathing shallow, how much of his breath am I wasting? Just addicted to the next. I just want a quick hit of his breath.
Yeah.
You know, in all of that. I'm so anxious to read whatever she's going to write. I mean,
you make my mind spin, Brian, because this deep breath idea in the physician, the nurse listening. In my brain, I'm going, what do they hear? Like if our soul is eternal, which is inside of us, right? Like it's going to live forever when this shell of a body goes on. There's something in us, our heart and our mind and our soul, this entanglement of what God created.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you hear somebody's soul when they breathe? Like God has breathed into them. And if you're listening through with this medical device, yeah, stethoscope. Are you hearing the soul, and are you hearing something godly in them?
Yes, because when we're not breathing, like when we're dead, you're not hearing breath. You're not hearing this ruach of what God has breathed into us.
There's this thing in Ezekiel, right, in the Valley of Dry Bones, where the scripture says that I will make these bones breathe.
Yeah.
Like, I will cause these bones to breathe. I don't, my Bible's upstairs. Somebody could look it up. We're using my phone for whatever.
Ezekiel 37.
I will breathe into these dry bones. I will make these dry bones breathe. And I thought how weird it is that he said the bones will breathe.
Yeah, I've thought about that.
Yeah.
As opposed to the lungs will breathe. But if I hold my breath.
Don't do too long. We're running the air.
Okay, whatever. As soon as I start holding my breath, my body will become oxygen deficient. Like soon as it starts.
Yes.
You become, but your blood already has a certain amount of oxygen in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that the air goes into your lungs. It's that the oxygen gets into your blood.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he breathes into us, yes, the air gets into our lungs, but the oxygen also gets into our blood all the way to our bones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your bones need oxygen.
Yeah.
And so when he breathes into us, it wasn't just breath. It was oxygenation all the way. And it has to get into your lungs and then your blood cells. And then it goes to your heart, right? So you die in life. Like, in life, you're either going to die because your heart is no longer getting oxygen to the rest of your body through the blood. Or your lungs stop giving the blood oxygen. So either you're not getting oxygen to the blood, or you're breathing, but your heart is no longer getting oxygen-rich blood to the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, when you look at Ezekiel and he's like, I'm going to make these dry bones breathe. These bones will breathe. Mm-hmm. They get to this point in that chapter where they are this fully developed creature that has everything but breath.
Yeah.
They have the muscles, they have the ligaments, they have all of the stuff, and but they look formed, but they're not breathing.
Yeah.
And like there was a camp that I went to several weeks ago and preached this camp, and Ezekiel 37 was their theme, which is such a Pentecostal theme for
it is. For teen camp. Teen camp, yeah.
You know, not identity.
No,
right.
No, not
nothing
purpose.
Like that. Not purpose. Not the love of God. Or no. Nope.
Dry bones will breathe.
Ezekiel 37. But I thought, oh my, like, there is this possibility that you can have like the entire look of the living, but not the breath of the living.
Yeah.
Like that you have the look. The only difference is that you're not breathing. And having had a million different jobs in my life, one of those being a tech on a cardiothoracic vascular unit, where I got a chance to do CPR a lot on people who had been out of heart surgery and were coding. the big difference in like someone who has just died and someone who is dying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the person who is trying to die, is that kind of how they would say it? Don't let them die on us and they're trying to die. They have to have one. They have to have somebody pumping that heart. And then there was always this respiratory therapist who would have this mm-hmm. thing. And they would constantly be breathing with an Ambu bag into their lungs.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think there's been a temptation sometimes in the church to be so focused on compressions.
Mm.
Right? And trying to compress into people or compress out of people. You need to confess this. You need to denounce this. You need to do this. Mm-hmm. And when the Lord didn't, in Genesis, it doesn't seem like the Lord started his heart. The Lord breathed into him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There was no compressions.
Yeah.
Right. But with breath came everything else.
Came life.
With breath comes, and this is the thing, and we've, Brian, you and I have been wrestling this. I think we've wrestled it publicly on the show a little bit. This clarity versus certainty versus faith. Yeah. And so in light of that thought we've been working through, the breathing in of the Lord, you can't just take that in. You can't just perpetually in-breathe. Something yeah, has to come to out.
Breathe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and I think sometimes I think we're like, Lord, breathe in. But I think the faith step for us in a practical sense has to become the intentional breathing out, like what we put out of us.
Yeah.
And I think if we're not operating in faith, one of the things we've been wrestling is what's the faith step? What's do we got to wait on certainty? Do we got to wait on clarity? Or is faith just a step and without knowing either one, the breathing out is the faith step because we can't just keep breathing in.
Yeah. What are we doing with this borrowed breath that we have been given? How are we exhaling? How are we,
yeah.
What are we doing? Even with, it's just, you just, what are we doing with it every day?
Yeah.
Every moment. Are we cussing the people out on the front
door? Yeah.
Which I'm guilty, sure. But just a thought.
She's a Cajun. It's okay.
My windows aren't rolled down.
Exactly.
It's not offensive unless your windows are rolled down.
But what I'm wondering is, and this is where we've been walking, and Ainsley, I think it fits where the season you're in, is we keep asking God to breathe in for maybe the certainty or the clarity, right? And
mm-hmm. yeah,
and the breathing out is the faith step. It's the season of going like, I don't know what it is, but if I don't breathe out, I eventually die. I can take in all the oxygen I want, but if it doesn't come back out of me, I don't know that I can sustain a lift.
Right.
So the Lord can keep breathing in, and we can take deep breath, deep breath, deep breath, but eventually the body goes, it's got to come back out of me. Mm-hmm. And I think if we don't exhale in walking in faith, stepping out into the things of the Lord, I think eventually we just become those dry bones.
Yeah. Mm. You know, have you ever tried to talk while breathing in?
No. I just did it. No, it doesn't work.
You can't. It just sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm trying to say right now. You know, like it sounds insane.
Yeah.
Right? But you can't really speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't really communicate to others. You can't really say, I love you. Ainsley, do you sing? Are you a singer?
We can't go there.
No? She's a singer? She is?
In the back corner of Spotify somewhere is an album.
Yeah. Shut
it's
up.
A dusted, it's a very dusty album.
Pop country.
I'll say no.
I'm off of this. Okay.
No.
All right.
But past.
If you've ever been in like a really like good vocal ensemble or somebody who's doing warm-ups or coaching mm-hmm. singers, they'll tell a singer when they're trying to help them advance, you're breathing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or sometimes you're putting your voice in the wrong place, right? Mm-hmm. Placement of a sound. But a lot of times first thing that they'll tell them when someone's learning how to sing is you got to start breathing right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not that you're singing wrong. You're breathing wrong. Mm-hmm. And your voice will never do what it could do if you don't breathe right. And like that army in Ezekiel 37 really wasn't called an army like fully until they began to breathe. Both breathe in and breathe out.
Yeah.
For you to speak, for you to sing, for the creative thing to happen in you, there is both inhale and exhale. And I do think I am addicted to inhaling.
Oh, for sure. Me too.
I want the Holy Spirit to pour out your flesh upon all men, me included. Maybe me, like, extra included. Especially. Yeah. Me especially.
You and Mount Fuji.
Yeah, me and Mount Fuji. I want to be included. I want to breathe you in. All of these things. And I wonder how much the Lord's like, man, I can't really take you further until you learn until to you breathe right.
Yeah.
You're breathing wrong. So you can't sing those notes and you can't write that book and you're not going to be able to go to that place with me. You're breathing wrong, Brian. And that's why when you go hit the high note, you always miss it. Why when you try to extend the notes or you try to serve well, that's why that selfishness always, you're breathing me in wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Breathing me out wrong. And I just did a mentorship with somebody for a month or so. And in that, they absolutely just beat me up over my inability to ask the Lord for things.
Yeah.
Like, I ask the Lord for all of this stuff for other people. Help me dig wells in another country. Mm-hmm. Help me with this children's home. I ask for things that I know the Lord has to say yes to, so to speak. Yeah. Like, according to his heart. And he loves the widow and the orphan. So if I'm asking for widows or orphans.
Yeah, easy pickings.
Automatic, yes. That's not a big faith move.
Yeah.
Like, the people are like, you have so much faith to dig wells. Are you serious?
Yeah.
We're providing water that's like the lowest level of faith. Yeah. Faith would be if like for something crazy that doesn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. This makes sense on every level. Of course God's saying yes to this. But my page of prayers in my journal for me is like blank except for like these declarative scriptures. And I found myself saying, Lord, I don't know how to ask you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. How do I ask you? What do I ask for me? And now at the tail end of this conversation about the greatness that you're about to write with your new publisher.
Who knows who it is?
Yeah.
Unnamed.
Or self-publish.
I can feel myself missing the high note.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm saying, Lord, I don't know how to breathe.
Yeah.
And I do. I think that one of the things that has been a focus for me is you've been breathing wrong. You've been focused on X, Y, Z. And I just want you to focus on being with me. I want you to focus on what I'm telling you, what I'm whispering to you. I just want you to understand that your purpose in this world, you don't have to write another book. You don't have to have another kid. You don't have to do X, Y, Z. You don't have to do all of these boxes that you're checking or these things that you're like, this is my calling in life. You know, people are so pursuant of that, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But if we lose focus, we have lost how to breathe right. We've lost that ability. We don't know. And he's like, all I'm calling you to do is make disciples and be near to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you really break it down, if you want, if we can just stop pursuing, like chasing and listen and make disciples, I think that we will understand how to breathe right. And we will understand, we will be able to carry out all of those things that he has called us to do or wants us to do. But if we're getting so distracted with all this other stuff, and we're like, look at me, look what we're doing, look what we're doing, look what we're doing, me and God, we're doing these things. And if we have forgotten how to breathe, if we're addicted to the rapid breath, if we're just like, you know, not able to keep the focus of how it's really just nearness and intentionality with him. And like, you know, whenever you can, you know, you're close to someone when you can feel their breath on you. And that's how, you know, I don't want to be like that with a single other person except for the Lord. I don't want to feel anybody's breath on me. I don't like close talkers, nothing. But if I can be so close to the Lord to feel his breath on me and then act out of what I'm being told, I think that I will have stewarded his borrowed breath well.
Yeah.
I hope.
So I've been running, like actually running for 15, 16 years now. But I feel like I'm just now learning how to run, which is crazy to say. There's like heart rate zones like that your heart runs at, so you can get to a max, like a max VOX, right? And so I'm learning to run in what they call zone two, which is this like just above like resting. So you got to run slower and you have to be able to basically carry a conversation and run at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you got to, it's not fast breath, because what the studies are saying is like if you run really fast and your heart rate's at max or at near your max, you're burning glycogen, your sugars, and so you're going to run out of energy. In zone two, you're going to burn fat, which is a slow burning energy source, so you can actually run at a slower pace but a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes in ministry and life, we run at max early on.
Yeah.
And we can't sustain because we're out of breath.
Yep.
And I think in this like inhale, exhale conversation we somehow got to, that it's not stopping. Mm-mm. It's running at a slower pace so that we got the sustained breath and energy to keep going. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for you and I, we've done ministry, Ainsley, you've done ministry a long time. We have moments where we sprint, and I think that's necessary sometimes. But if we overrun, we're gonna run out of breath, and we're not gonna be able to keep going in faith and stepping out, and we're gonna run out of borrowed breath because we're just burning it all up early.
Yeah.
And burnout and resentful potentially, and just like, why didn't my timeline work? And the Lord's like, because you weren't on mine, you weren't listening to me, you weren't listening to my coaching along the way. And that zone two is the best for your heart. And heart has been top of mind since I had Truett. That's been a huge focus in our home, and heart health. So, I mean, whenever I'm thinking of this breath and the heart and like all of these things, it's just so macro and micro. I have so many thoughts about all of this stuff as it relates to faith, but in the most simple thought of being God's borrowed breath, it really is like, how is your tone when you're talking? How is your, what are you saying with your words? What are you sharing with people? How are you talking about other people? And is it a reflection of the Lord? And is it showing them who he is? Because I think it's easy to get caught up in outside, like, when you're not actively in ministry every single day, you're not really thinking about how you're talking, or are you speaking life over people? Because you're just not in that vernacular is not going around. But whenever I'm thinking about Connor at the coffee shop, you know, I know a little bit about him because I've stopped and paid attention to my words with him. And can I encourage him if I'm going to see him every morning? You know, is there a way that I can breathe life into him in his mundane day in and day out and that kind of stuff? I don't know.
There's so much in scripture, it feels like, that requires breath.
Mm-hmm.
It says if you believe, if you have faith. So you can have faith, you can have belief. It says, and you say to the mountain.
Say to the mountain. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Now, you can have faith and you can have belief, but if you have no breath to speak, or if you use your breath and you say everything else except to the mountain,
right?
Like, I feel like there's times where I'm praying everything else but to the thing. Yeah. Like, I can't ask God for the thing. And the Lord's like, I won't give you unless you ask me, right? I'm thinking back to coffee with this boy that's wanting to hang out with my little girl. And we get coffee, and like, I told her, no one can date you unless I get coffee with them. Mm-hmm. Because I want to be in their life.
Yeah.
I don't want to threaten him. I want to, if you're going to be kind to someone I love, the amount of advocacy and the fight that I will give for you,
right?
You have no clue the kind of friend you have in me if you're good to people that I love.
Totally.
And so, you know, we sat for an hour and a half before he ever brought her up. And I was like, I'm not bringing it up. You have to bring her into the conversation. And I feel like there's times where the Lord's like, I'm not bringing it up. If you don't speak to the mountain, I'm not speaking for you. There's the James, confess, unless you confess your sins one to another, mm-hmm. like confess your sins one to another, that you might be healed, not even forgiven.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Healed. Mm-hmm. And we're like, why won't the Lord heal me? Why won't the Lord heal me? But there's, you know, it's not just realize your sins. It's not just meditate on the betterness of that you want. It's the breath that is required to confess.
Yeah.
I mean, to speak, to sing, to all of those things.
Think about the man in the pool of Bethesda as you bring that up. And Jesus asked him, like, do you want to be well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, do you want to be well? And like the courage it takes to say, yeah, I want to be well.
Mm-hmm.
To speak that, to breathe that out. Like,
I have to tell y'all about the miracle, one of my favorite stories, my favorite story about Truett's heart condition and all of this stuff. So whenever my son was diagnosed with tetralogy of Fallot in utero, and that means and I'm definitely not making it through this story without crying, so buckle up. So that means he had four things wrong with his heart, and they all had to get fixed. And they don't live past 3 years old if you don't get these things fixed. Mm-hmm. So at 3 months, he had open heart surgery. Prior to this, because I had, you know, this diagnosis at 20 weeks, essentially 24 weeks pregnant. My friend Adrian had open heart surgery already. And I remember thinking what everyone says, I could never imagine. I'm just not strong enough. You know, I thought all those thoughts. And then the Lord was like, mm-hmm. we're about to find out if you can imagine. But she had this God sign of a snail. And it's a funny story. One day, I hope she gets to tell it to the masses, because it's just a funny how she got her God sign, right? And I was like, I want a God sign. Like, Lord, I want a reminder every day. Like, I need a reminder, because what the hell is going on, you know, with this heart stuff. And so I didn't know. I was like, I don't know what it can be, though. Like, what should I ask for? Hers is a snail, so I guess it can be something that seems insignificant. But then I realized that my mentors and I were very much in that season talking about the promises of God and the reliability of the promises of God and how much he means his promises and how much we can depend on his promises and all of this. And I was like, well, when I think about the promises of God, I think about a rainbow, and I think about, you know, the ark and all this stuff. So I was like, Lord, will you just show me a rainbow every day? Knowing full well that it was winter and it certainly isn't raining, you know, it's not raining every day. So I don't know if I'm going to see a rainbow every day, but I just prayed for it. And I was like, I need to know that you're near. I need to know this is whenever I find out. And I wasn't testing in a way that was like, if you don't show up, I'm out. But I was just like, I'm so desperate, because I've never encountered something so hard, I guess. Like, I've had hard things. I've lost people I've loved. But when your child is so fragile, it's just a whole different thing. So he's born. We're not allowed to let him cry too hard, or else his blood in his heart would be deoxygenated. And within a few minutes, he would die. We wouldn't, it's called a TET spell. They turn blue and you have to get them to the emergency room. And so that is a whole, you know, breath conversation too. But since when I've started praying about rainbows, every single day I saw a rainbow somewhere. Somebody would send me a rainbow because it wasn't just me praying about it. I told everyone. And I was like, guys, I'm praying for a rainbow every single day. This is how I know. I mean, I've told my Instagram, like I was very, hey, this is what I'm praying for. And I've been very open about currently I'm praying for healing from obsessive compulsive disorder that came out of the heart stuff and yada, yada, yada. But the rainbow happened every single day whenever I was praying throughout his surgery, prior to his surgery, throughout his surgery, after his surgery. And I remember thinking, I don't know when the rainbows are going to stop. I'll be so upset the day that they stop because they really came from strangers. They came from the sky. They came from cartoons. I mean, I saw a rainbow every single day. And for months, like this was months. And it's just crazy when you think about how you have to be looking for the thing to see it every day. But I was, and I did. And then I remember talking to the surgeon afterwards, and they were like, okay, in 8 weeks, like you can't pick him up under his arms for 8 weeks. You have to like scoop him up and hold him like that. You cannot lift him from under his arms because he's sewn together, right? On his sternum. And the day after the 8 week mark was the first day I didn't see a rainbow. And that was the day after he was fully healed. His complete healing was 8 weeks later. And it was the day after the 8 weeks that the rainbow, it didn't come that day. And I was like, you gave me a rainbow throughout his entire healing process.
Wow.
And now he is healed. And now I don't see one. And I was like, I'm thankful not to see a rainbow today because that means that he's healed and that he's okay. Yeah. And I've still seen rainbows every now and then. You know, I'll still ask the Lord, like, can you just, I just need one. And this is the best part. We go to this fundraiser for the nonprofit I was talking about, the Louisiana Pediatric Cardiology Foundation. They give grants to families to relieve some of the financial burden of finding a hotel room because you have to travel for these surgeries. You can't, there's only a few cities that like are specialized in them. Anyway, so they just help lift the financial burden and all of that. So we're at the fundraiser. They had asked me to speak, me and Justin to speak. And I invite some of our friends and my cousin was there with us, my Cajun cousin, not real blood related. And I'm not kidding. Like that day, a couple of my friends came over to borrow dresses. We all had this group, me and my friends all have a group chat and we were all talking about what we were wearing, all this stuff, da da da. We went to the event and I was like, everybody, let's go take a picture, da 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 da. And we all stood up for the picture. And not everyone was wearing what they originally planned. And it just so happened that there were seven of us and it was red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple.
That's crazy.
And we were all in a rainbow. And it was the odds of seven people showing up in that order and in those colors is so microscopic. It's not like the odds were like, ChatGPT was like, yeah, that's a miracle. Because we were like, what are the mathematic odds that many people would show up in that way? And I was like, oh my gosh, you just showed everybody. I had just been on stage and told everybody about the rainbows. And then I'm looking at all of my closest friends and family who carried us through this season. And we are a rainbow.
Man.
And that was just absolutely insane. And I was just like, I have to tell everybody. Because are you kidding me? Like, that's, God is such a girl dad because he planned all of our outfits to coordinate with his miracle.
Yeah.
So I think about that.
That's just
all the time.
Not to mention for them, for those people to be the embodiment of that.
to be a part of it.
Like, not only did I give you rainbows every day, but like Sarah and Vanessa, like, I'm making up names, but I'm like, this is your, I also gave you all these people too.
Right.
Because I knew a rainbow on the TV or in your text message wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These were, and they saw, and the these miracle. Were always be present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the craziest thing, the, I That's mean, that wild. Was the, that was one of the crazy, that was for sure the craziest thing. But even prior to me asking for the rainbows, all of those people in the picture had made me a care basket, you know, to go to the hospital mm-hmm. with face mask and cozy socks and all of those. And the, this was prior to me asking for the rainbows, okay? Before I even prayed about it, my friend sent me a screenshot of my other friend who had had the, her son had had the heart surgery. She texted and said, I really just feel like this basket has to have every color of the rainbow in it.
Hmm.
Wow.
So she had already, like,
yeah,
not even knowing she got, you know, a word about rainbows. She didn't even know that the rainbow would be significant. And she had the yeah. idea to make the basket something was every color of the rainbow.
Well, I mean, I reflect on the scripture. I think it's in the gospel. Jesus said, he knows our needs before we even ask.
Yes, exactly.
And I think sometimes he knows the need before we know to ask.
Yep.
Like he's yeah. already aware. And maybe to bring full circle to Brian's statement, the all the things we're going to talk about, maybe he's just waiting on us to ask.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that our ask is not even a surprise to him. I think that's where I have to get. Like, it's not like, surprise, Lord, here's what yeah. I need. Yeah. He's like, no, I already know if you would just ask.
Right. That's what made me think of it when Brian said, ask the thing. I was like, oh, you have to know about the rainbows.
So Truist yeah. doing better.
He's doing What's great. He will have to have a couple more procedures and surgeries later
yeah.
in life. But as of right now, the facts are is that he is a healthy, happy kid. My brain still sees him as a post-op, fragile, teeny baby.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to rewire my brain. But the fact is that he is happy and healthy and wild and crazy and perfect. And Goldie is too.
So for Ainsley, Justin, Goldie, and Truett now, what's the ask? What are you asking now, or what do you need to ask of the Lord in this season?
Well, for me, for Ainsley, I do need my brain to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in an intensive OCD therapy because when you are told your child can't get sick prior or post surgery and they can't cry too hard, you suddenly have this assumption of control that I can control germs and that I can control XYZ. So me and the Lord are working through that right now, but for our family as a whole, I think we are asking the Lord to, I don't know why the word, like, infuse our home with the Ruach, the breath of God, so that anyone who comes into it, we've only been here maybe a month and we've already had like three parties. So big, we're big host people, right? The two wing three is mm-hmm. called the host. I want people to feel anointed when they walk in. I've anointed this whole house. I want people to receive that breath of God, like whenever they just are here. So that's the overarching thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that sound, Brian. There's thoughts.
Yeah, wheels are turning.
No, I just like, I mean, I think back to, like, before Acts 2, before the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and there's this moment post-resurrection where Jesus is with the disciples
mm-hmm.
in the room, and it says that he breathes on them.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think I have far too long asked for what happens in Acts 2 in the upper room.
The fire.
Without asking for what happened in like the...
I think it's John 20.
The like that, it was much more private room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the 120. It was more like the 12 or the 11.
Yeah.
Right. The, when he breathes on them. And I think my mind just goes to that place that not for the empowerment, right? Not mm-hmm. the thing so that I can go preach Joel chapter 3, what's never been preached before. Not that. And so I'm saying, okay, one, Lord, I want that thing. I definitely want that thing. I also think, like, even Ainsley, even you, like, we are so aware to ask for a rainbow when our child is about, like, this circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And now the rainbow is stopped, or the rainbow is less necessary daily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that it stopped, because it never stops.
Yeah.
But is there another itineration or an evolution of, okay, what am I supposed to ask for next?
Mm.
And I'm like sitting here thinking, God, what would you want me to ask for? Like, I don't need a rainbow, but is there something that you're just wishing I would yeah. ask you for? Because I love when my kids ask for some things. Now, sometimes I want to, you know, choke them.
Yeah.
But because they are there nothing but asking.
Right.
Right.
But then yeah. there are times where when they ask for something, and I love that they ask this.
Mm-hmm.
And is there something that the Lord would love to show up and show me mm-hmm. every day, and I just have never asked him?
Yeah.
And for our son, for Ainsley, for her son, for Truett, the Lord loved that. I think,
yeah,
mm-hmm. he was as excited about it every day as you were about seeing it.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna put a little one here, a little one there, a little one there.
There's this one. There's, yeah.
And my daughter now knows to ask for rainbows, to look for rainbows, not ask for rainbows. Yeah. She'll point out a rainbow everywhere. Mom, look at this rainbow. Mom, look at this rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about when you were a little kid. In your vehicle, driving somewhere, and your mom was like, or your dad, whoever, your grandmother.
My grandmother.
When she was like, look at this rainbow. When someone pointed it out, and you were like a little kid saying, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And in that moment, when little Ainsley, that was 11, seeing this rainbow, and the Lord's like, one day,
mm-hmm.
you're going to need this.
Yeah.
One day. If the angels were like, or if the Holy Spirit and whatever providence knows the end from the beginning and is not like limited by time and knows your end, knows like, yeah, that's going to be even more fun one day. And I'm just like, Lord, is there a rainbow that you're waiting for Brian to ask you for?
Mm.
Well, you know, the best part. Is, you know, I think about all the rainbows that happened before. Like, we saw a rainbow the day we found out we were pregnant with Truett.
Mm.
And one of the things that I've noticed that goes back to what you were saying about Mount Fuji and taking a picture with the mountain. I never care to be in the picture with the rainbows. I just want to take a picture of the rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I don't know, just a fun little callback, because I don't think I've ever stepped. I've maybe taken a picture of it with Goldie in it, but I've never been like, take my picture with this rainbow.
Yeah.
I wonder, a picture of the rainbow.
I wonder if in a moment like that, where we have the certainty to call back to that, that it is the Lord, that if mm-hmm. we really become so unfocused on ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Like when the moment is that you've been asking for this, for Ainsley a rainbow, for Brian uncertainty, me, I don't know what I'm asking for yet, but whatever it is, when the Lord shows up, you go, that's not me, that's God. So why would I want to be in the picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when the Mount Fuji's, like, we want to be in the picture because we want it to be about us. And what maybe our heart's cry really is, if we really peel back the layers and we even go back to Enneagram types and whatever, is that we need to get to a place of going, like, it can't be about me and it has to be about God, completely about God. And I just get to be a participant in it. Mm-hmm. Like, I get to breathe out the air that he put in.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm in that season of, like, I breathed in the rainbows and now I breathe out the story.
Yeah.
Because the story is so wild to me.
I preached, this is for you, Ainsley, and you take it and leave it, whatever. I went as a youth pastor a long time ago. I was younger, cooler, and more creative. But mm-hmm. I preached a message, and the hook line of the message throughout was that wounds tell the story of wounds tell the story of our hurting, but scars tell the story of our healing.
Yeah.
Having a scar is not a bad thing. You posted picture of Truett's scar several mm-hmm. times. I've seen those. And I think the scars we carry, we can't look at them as bad things. We have to look at them as the point of our healing, the story mm-hmm. of God's healing. Mm-hmm. So in the OCDs and whatever, man, friend, I want you to look at that and go, that's a story of God's healing, not of Truett's hurting anymore.
Yeah.
And whatever scars you carry, and we've had conversations on air, off air, about all those things. And so whatever scars you carry, whatever scars Brian and I carry, those are stories of healing and not stories of hurting.
Yeah. That's so true.
Man. I think that if you don't get a small rainbow tattoo on your wrist, you're doing life wrong.
Let me tell you, I want to get rainbow confetti on my shoulder.
Okay, tattoo. So whatever.
That feels very Cajun Louisiana right there. That feels right.
Whatever.
Or like I want it. What I really want is, yes, shoulder, but I also want, because writing, right? You like have your hand on the desk, like mm-hmm. when you're typing. I want rainbow confetti right there, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I like, but I can't find a good tattoo artist around here. The last one made me cry, so TBD.
I can send you a contact. I know there's a Christian guy that's done a bunch of art for people I know.
In Louisiana? And,
no. But he does travel.
Okay.
You get a group of people that all want work, and he comes to, like, he'll come and do stuff for, like, you can get like 5 or 6 people. He'll come, stay, and do some work. He kind of travels. What's his? I can't remember right off the top of my head.
We'll find it and get to you.
God's Canvas or something. This is. I can't remember. So I want to ask you this question. But I also want to tell you. I want to tell you the story. It's not long, and I know we want to give you time to be interruptible for whatever this afternoon has for you. There was this girl, we were out in the bush in Zambia, and there's this girl who had a skin condition all over her hands. She was a nursing student, and she'd have her hands wrapped in bandages so she could see about patients and stuff. But she had this skin conditions and these things that would grow on her hands. And one of the guys, one of like the ministers there in Africa, he said, "Can I pray for you? And over your hands?" And she kind of unwrapped the bandages, and you could see these things on her hands. And she goes, I can have them removed, but they always come back." She's like, "They can be removed, but they always come back." And he looks her dead square in the eye, and he says, "And they always will, because you believe they will."
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And for as long as you believe they will, I want to encourage and just declare over that cyclical, like that mindset, that thing that happened when you were being such a good mom, right? That that need that you were meeting when you had to control,
yeah,
created like a belief system that you needed to operate in for that season, and but that would end because I do think that when we believe something in our faith, because we are spiritual, we're always spiritual.
Right.
We never stop being spiritual because we are spiritual beings. But if your faith, because your faith and you're so loved by the Lord, I think if you believe something, then it happens in that power that we manifest with the Lord. But that belief system, that it would be able to be safely dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
You can bulldoze a building and you can do that, and there's a safe way to do it. And so as you're walking through this with the Lord, the Lord doesn't so want to dismantle all that in a way that's not safe for Ainsley,
mm-hmm,
for your heart. We could just bulldoze it all and just demand control back to him and all this stuff, but he cares so much about your safety. Coming into knowing that we're going to sit down and I get to meet you for the first time, I wanted to ask you this question. I end up having random questions for guests. A lot of times I don't read their books on purpose and I don't do this stuff. And I'm just constantly saying, Holy Spirit, what do you want to say? Right? What would you ask her? And I do want to ask this question. If the Lord was going to introduce you to a room, to a group, whether you're about to speak, it could be at a table and you don't know anybody. But if he were going to say, let me introduce Ainsley, what would he say?
That is a great question. I'm definitely not, I don't know that I'll have like a, I think that's in something I'll have to sit with longer for, like, what I feel like will be the answer. But I do know he'd call me daughter. I mean, I know he would say, this is my daughter. And I want to think he would say, this is my daughter who I've had the pleasure of revealing myself to in such a new and intimate way recently. I can't wait for you to hear her stories.
Yeah.
You know, because that is my way of communication, is the storytelling. But I think that he has revealed himself to me so, so differently than ever before with Truett and Goldie, but mainly Truett because of the desperation of it all and losing people that I loved. I think since Jeff and I's last conversation, I've lost a cousin and an uncle and two people I love very much. I think he would say, I've had the pleasure of revealing myself to her in such a different way. I can't wait for you to hear her tell you about it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I hope that question resonates for a minute. Like, with
it
you.
Certainly will.
Because I think if you could hear what he would say, it would so overwhelm you.
Yeah.
Because you would be like, he thinks about me like that?
Right.
Like, there would be this moment where you'd be like, yo, I'm not that. Did he not? Was he not there when I was growing up? Like, that's not. And I have this sense, like, of this invitation for as much as he's revealed about himself and all of these things, for you to see how he sees Ainsley, like, and then with that question, as it becomes to be answered, like, live towards that thing, towards that introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's a
for
great
sure.
question.
Yeah.
Love
and
that.
Then the next time we talk, I'd love to hear your
wrestling.
Polished introduction of the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no good way to get out of this conversation. What a fun but day. Yeah, let's honor Ainsley's time to go be mom and all the things. We have a couple questions we want to wrap up with. So Brian, why don't you ask your question?
So to people who are on the fence of taking the risk of writing the book, releasing the back album on Spotify for the people who are just not trying because of a lack of courage, fear. What would you say to inspire people to just do the thing, just to do good, just to do it?
I think that I would tell them that the pressure's off because if you're partnering with the Lord in anything, like the borrowed breath, the simple thing I was talking about earlier is that you don't have to check these boxes. You don't have to be a New York Times bestseller to be used by the Lord. You don't have to, you know, be an Iron Man. You can just breathe in what the Lord has for you and breathe out a blessing on someone else. And it will be fulfilling. It will be, you will see miracles. And when you feel like the breath has been taken from your lungs, you know the source of who can refill it and send people to refill it, right? Whenever I felt breathless in the hospital, my friends were there. Mm. My family was there, breathing life over my son, breathing life over me. I was a shell of a person. And I was just constantly reading about the Holy Spirit. I had Jenny Randall's book about Holy Spirit. And I was just reading that in the hospital. And I'm getting a flashback. I'm trying to usher out of my brain. But I think we overcomplicate it. I think we make it this thing that, like, God has called me to do. I've gotten this vision, and I've been guilty of this too. Like, he's given me this vision. I don't know how to execute for next year. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And he's like, if you will just focus on your day in and day out, focus on me near, we will make it happen. Don't worry about it.
So that's the thing I think what I would tell. Especially for people that it doesn't have to be writing a book. It could be inviting friends over to your house.
Yeah.
To go ahead and make the crock pot. 1,000
words a day.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to write a book, write a book. But don't sit there and think you need to write 50,000 words in one time. Same. I limited myself to 3,000 words a day. And I could not write a word more so I could pace myself and not burn out and not run out of breath.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. Pressure's off.
Ainsley, you're one of my favorite people in the world. You're obviously a nobody that nobody knows, but
nobody. We think nobody's always a nobody.
We think nobodies are great things around here. So who is a nobody in your life that you think the world does need to know about?
Well, she won't let the world know about her, but I have two. One is my friend Jamie. She does everything for me that Aaron is out of my gifting and into hers, administrative stuff, all of that. She's just, she's more than anything, an amazing friend. She will stay hidden forever, and she's thrilled to be there. And I love that. I love learning from that because I'm like, showbiz. And she's like, please no. So her for sure. And then my mentor, Mimi Mujeres, she's in California, who's so far from me. And she just reminds me of one of the things that is like echoing my mind all the time is like, who are you partnering with, the Lord or are you partnering with fear? Because you can't do both at the same time.
Yeah, that's good.
And so I think about that every single day. So she's wildly impacted my life and everything.
I feel like with her mic drop on partnering with fear, like we might need to have a conversation with her. might need to book her on the show.
Yeah.
You should.
Hello, Mimi.
She's incredibly prophetic. She would do it. She would do it.
Yeah.
She
We'll hook that up. I'll get the contact. We'll hook that up.
I actually want to record something with her on prophecy and the prophetic gifting and whatever.
Let's do all four of us. We'll get Ainsley and me on the show. We'll do that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we'll make that happen.
Listen, she would do
it.
It'll
be fun.
Text thread
coming up. And
she'll
be like, why did you, like, tell people about me? Just because she's like, I'm happy being hidden, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, well, I won't let you be hidden because everything you say is solid gold. So
I love it.
All right. Well, Ainsley, we love having you. I love talking to you. You're one of my favorites. And as we always say, here with a couple of nobodies, you don't ever have to try to be somebody. Thanks, friend.
I love it. Thank you.